This podcast is an initiative of the Australian Intercollegiate Meat Judging Association to showcase the career paths available within the meat processing industry. ICMJ is a not-for-profit association which aims to provide opportunities for students to learn, building the pool of intelligent young meat industry representatives into the future. ICMJ does this through a series of events across Australia and overseas. For more information, head to the website icmj.com.au. Paul Gibson didn't have the traditional entry into the red meat processing industry. In fact, he was working away building houses when the opportunity presented itself. He was already settled into a construction career when Australian Country Choice came knocking. Mr. Gibson has risen the ranks over his 30-year career, from labourer to now being the Group Manager of Research Development Innovation at ACC, Australia's largest vertically integrated beef business. I'm Amy McCosker, and I started my conversation with Mr. Gibson by asking him what led to such a dramatic career change from construction to meat processing.
Well, I came from the construction and property development industry, and in the mid-80s there was the global stock market crash, and that seriously affected the property market. I ended up out of the industry as a result of that economic downturn. I moved into a prestige home builds and renovations with an architect friend of mine, did a job for the owner of this organisation, ACC, and said he had an opportunity that he was wanting to develop a new business model and it could go anywhere. So he said he invited me to join. That was nearly 30 years ago now. So I came across from property and construction. What I brought with me was I think 10 to 12 years of, project management, which is a fairly significant, in my opinion, a skill base that's has application to any industry, either privately or professionally. I came to the business without any qualification in the meat industry whatsoever. So as is normal in those days, you started from the bottom and you worked your way. So I came into the business effectively as a labourer. You couldn't call it anything else. And over those decades, I've progressively gathered more knowledge and experience and moved into different roles in the company as it's grown and developed. I had a very specific interest in the area of research and development, given that there was a family. My father was particularly in that area of agriculture in terms of the research approach as an agronomist. So I suppose something stuck there, so I tended to lean that way. When the business asked me where I wanted to go, that was certainly what I mentioned, and that's how I've ended up in that role, and subsequently that's where I am today.
So it really was a chance meeting. It wasn't an industry that you were, you know, gunning for or interested in particular. It was just that you were lucky enough to end up in a room with someone who offered you that opportunity.
Yeah, I was on a loose end. I was at the right place at the right time, and an opportunity arose and I grabbed it. I don't regret it at all. Although I did say to my father, I will never, ever work in agriculture. Because when I left school, I went to college to do architecture. So, and hence why I moved into construction and property development. And I still couldn't stay away. I've ended up back in agriculture, which was always a family joke that I was going to run away from agriculture, but I was ended up back in it, right up to my neck in it. So...
like Hotel California.
There you go.
What did
something
they say?
Like that. You can, it's you don't. Yeah, you don't. Be careful what you wish for. You might not get it.
Yeah, you can check out, but you can never leave.
Anyway,
what exactly does the Group Manager for Research, Development, and Innovation do?
Well, to put it in simple terms, the way I approach it is that my job is to look at new science and new technology, or current science and current technology, and adapt it from other industries or from inside the industry to be able to deliver an improvement to the how we do business, particularly from the point of view of the bottom lines. For me, is the we buy and sell by kilos in the beef industry. In buying and selling by the kilo, we need to keep an eye not only just on the cost, but also need to keep an eye on the price, because the buy is relevant to cost, and the sell is relevant to price, and the gap between them is your margin. Fairly important to keep an eye on those things. So that's fundamentally what R&D is for me, and what I try to deliver to the business is the means to be able to affect the bottom line. The bottom line is the cost and price of those kilos at the production end for cost, and at the retail market end for price. Built around that, though, and it's not just limited to that, that's the direct impact that R&D can have on an organisation, is the bottom line. But it can also have an indirect impact. For me, the indirect impact is about building provenance around our product that makes it bulletproof in the marketplace, and provide third-party evidence to prove that provenance, because if you do so, then you provide a means to protect your product and therefore protect your business. That's the bulletproof component of it. But in doing so, with having that evidence on hand, gives you the means to be able to promote your organisation and your product on the basis that it's a point of difference in the marketplace. So it's a win-win in terms of that provenance component of how we do things. So for me, to summarise that, it's about two bottom lines. The first bottom line is the direct financial impact of cost and price, and the second area is the provenance that provides gives your product that point of difference, which gives you a differentiation in the market, and that provides and generates customer loyalty.
So I've been told by a few different people that you've got a passion for the less popular parts of the beast. And so often when we're talking about the beef industry, we focus on meat quality and things like juicy rib fillets, the things that make, you know, great dinners, great Instagram photos. But you've chosen, I think, to focus on things like blood and rumen and wastewater, parts of a processing plant that aren't the sexiest. Is that because you can see the most benefit when you're talking about the bottom line just before? You know, have we reached that point with rib fillets that people are paying as much as they can and you've got to find your savings elsewhere? Or
I think so. I think when you look at the cost, we buy an entire animal, you just don't buy the muscle. So in buying an entire animal, we're buying, and let's call it a trade animal, a commercial supermarket animal. That's a 500 kilo animal, young and lean, and we're buying the entire animal. So I believe that you break that, in my mind, I break it into three basic groups in the process of slaughtering. You have the muscle meat. You have the organs, and then you have the hides and the bloods and those sort of situations. But I believe the three categories are you have product, and you have co-product, and you have by-product. The definitions of those is the product is the muscle meat, of course. The co-products is everything that makes money or is at least cost neutral after you've processed, and by-product waste streams. My opinion is there should be a zero waste stream for that 500 kilo animal. Everything should either be cost neutral or make a price, not a cost. In other words, the trick is in the first instance to move all of those byproduct waste streams into that co-product category, which means they're neutral or they make a price, they don't make a cost. And that means in looking at those co-products as everything other than muscle meat, which is the organs, the hides, the bones, the blood, and so on, and looking at each one of those elementally, right down to the biochemistry, right down to the atomic level, in terms of the possibilities of primary, tertiary, primary, secondary, and tertiary processing to make those into products across a range of three classifications. We can either make products that are food for human consumption, we can either make products that are feed for animal or plant consumption, or we can make fibre that has a means to make materials for all range of possibilities. The perfect example there is hides convert to leather, which convert to handbags and car seats. So there's opportunities across all three classifications of food, feed and fibre. So that's a very big sandpit, and the opportunity for new and novel products across those three classifications is enormous. Others come to mind at that atomic level, or that is across pharmaceuticals, nutraceuticals, cosmetics, industrial products. Another one is we take paunch material, gut, which is primarily cellulose. It's fibrous. We find ways to clean that up and turn it into things like packing materials. So the top of the pile there is into the biomedical range, which is prosthetics, which is not necessarily a food commodity, and it's not necessarily a feed commodity, but it's certainly a fibre from the point of view of taking a natural organic material and delivering it into that biomedical market for human prosthetics and even animal prosthetics, if that's the case. As you point out, one of them is the pericardium, which is the membrane which encapsulates the bovine heart. Is a very fine and strong membrane. They're being worked into human heart valves at the moment overseas. So there is a very large, broad opportunity if the industry has appetite to look at those co-products and do some significant value-adding with a concentrated effort.
There's some big issues that I know you've mentioned to me before about things like single-use plastic and how much water plants can use as well. Those are two environmental issues, of course, that are on the forefront of the community discussion at the moment. Big issues as well for meat processing. How close are we to solving those sort of issues?
We have a way to go. Let's take the main waste streams are wastewater and waste solids. We'll deal with them separately. Wastewater is a significant issue for processors from the point of view not only the consumption in the first instance in terms of having that water available, but the means to clean up that effluent water and then recycle it back. Domestic plants are able to recycle that water back into their food production. Export plants are not. For the purposes of import restrictions by other countries. So in this organisation's particular case, there is a significant amount of water that we buy from the water main. We clean it up through our effluent treatment, and then we dispose of it back into the sewer main. So the water's being paid for three times before it... and it's a natural resource that's lost into the sewer main doesn't come back into that water supply chain. So we're not getting particularly with the technologies and the science is there to be able to recycle that water back to potable for the purposes of food production. There are just restrictions in terms of how we use that water. On the solid waste side, organic waste such as paunch from gut removal and then similarly from those filtrated solids from our effluent treatment, we would call that sludge. that's materials that we're finding it very hard to deal with. They are classified as waste streams at this point in time, albeit that some of it's being used for composting and fertiliser production. Fundamentally, it's a cost to the industry. It's not a price to the industry. It's not making money. It's not neutral. It's costing. So the work around that is slow because it's just a material that's very hard to work with. Then you move across the other range. You've got your organic solids. You have your synthetic solids, which I the plastics are the main one through there. Many different types of plastics have the ability or the inability to be recycled. That's the first problem that we have. We need to move to a cross industry to plastics that do entirely have a recycle capability. Therefore, their life cycle is continuous as opposed to a one-time use. Similarly, we need to be able to find a way to capture these plastics that have that recycle capability and take that resource and continue to turn it through until it's exhausted. So from the point of view, it's continued to be reused and repurposed and recycled back into new products. I would argue that, as I said before, in the fibre area, we take those plastics, we potentially can turn them into structural plastics for building and construction. There's a whole capability, but once again, it's about the difficulty of getting the industry to get it all their plastics down to a recyclable type. Secondly, is means to be able to collect those plastics in such a way that we can recycle them into products that have a circular life cycle as opposed to a linear one where there's a one-time use.
And to head in a bit of a different direction now, you do lots of work with students and you've got, of course, a long-time association with the ICMJ. What has drawn you to that? Is it important for you to have this connection with students and with up-and-coming minds in the industry, even when you're 3 decades into your own career?
Well, I can't say that that's specifically a personal passion. I'd have to say that that's as much the organisation that I'm currently working for, is that all the smart organisations, big and small, should be looking at succession across their businesses, small and large. We're an industry that needs to move forward in terms of how, in my opinion, how we are represented and how we are seen as professional. The livestock and meat industry, without getting too out of order here, is we need to lift our professionalism, is my opinion. To do that, we need to educate ourselves to be able to lift the bar. So the young ones are fresh, they're energetic, they're eager, they bring, and if you can direct them and bring passion and drive and direct it, then they can do great things for any business. So I have a particular interest in it because it's bringing on new professionals into the industry, which is badly needed in my opinion, particularly from the point of view of scientists and technologists. I believe the modern world we live in, the old ways are tried and tested, but it has to be balanced with new ways, and in the modern world, science and technology is very much part of our day-to-day living. So, and it's not just in a professional way, but certainly in our lives entirely are affected by modern science and modern technology. So we need to adapt, we need to evolve. To do that, we need the young minds that are eager and energetic to deliver those outcomes.
And no doubt a few of those people are listening. Hopefully lots of them are listening now and thinking about where to enter the career, how to make the biggest mark that they can. So in your introduction today, I mentioned that you spent lots of time thinking about what would be the biggest picture innovation that could change the whole beef industry, the highest level. Now, I understand that you've got a bit of a box of black holes, as you call them, areas that you can see that change is needed and is coming. So as you see it today, what's the biggest black hole? What's the biggest issue that, if filled, could change the industry and the world? What's the biggest problem that could cause that could create the biggest change?
One word, measurement. I have a very particular personal focus on the fact that I talk about the bottom line, and the bottom line is about cost and price. But I'll add a third word there, and that's about compliance. As a cattle producer, you produce an animal to a spec, and that spec is tied to a market. And if you're going to produce cattle for that spec, for that market, you need to get your compliance 100%. That does two things. It ensures that you're paid optimal for the animal that you deliver. That is, it is compliant to specification, therefore you get the top price for your article. Secondly, from a processor point of view, they don't have to deal with out-of-spec product. They have then they're able to take a product to market that is that also is compliant. So getting those things right is one word, is compliance, and compliance turns into money for the producer, turns into money for the processor. And I'm talking 100% compliance. To do that, the only way to be able to manage that compliance is measurement. Now let's look at the cattle producer, and this is where this for me. If you talk about black holes, that is the biggest black hole of the lot, because at this point in time, cattle producers in this country don't have the means to measure their cattle against a grading specification to be able to ensure that their animals are 100% compliant to that specification. All cattle producers have is a weight and an age in terms of they have an idea when they're born. And they have an idea of the plane and nutrition that those animals, as long as they have had them, actually if they've bred them. So to summarise that, the producer is at a disadvantage on the basis they have a weight. They have no composition idea there from the point of view that of that weight, live weight, how much is muscle, how much is bone, and how much is fat, being the basic components or the main split of that animal. Which is how, and remember, they're paid on carcass weight. Secondly, they have no idea of the eating quality of that animal other than the fact that they know it's young and they know it's fat, and that's a good start from the point of view of how the animal will eat. But there is no means to be able to measure that animal as we would grade that animal to be able to ensure that they get 100% compliance to spec. That, for me, is a giant leap forward for industry. If we can crack that nut, that one black hole is solved, then a lot of money will be made, a lot of money will be recovered by the industry, and we can take a product to market that meets spec.
It would be amazing to imagine cattle being clearly measured on the hoof. Is there any work being done in this direction that you know of? Has anyone started on this?
Yes, topic? There is. Yes, when there's work happening in different locations around different science, particularly around the technology area. Let's look at yield as one component in terms of composition of muscle, bone and fat. CT is the standard. And that medical CT, as you would know, gives you very accurate composition. But that's a medical device at this point in time. They're looking at CT to be able to adapt it into being able to measure cattle and carcass. That will be the standard. If we're able to adapt technologies, medical technologies like that, then we will go a long way to solving it. So there is work being done in that area, yes, in terms of yield. And there's also work being done in terms of devices to be able to measure those quality traits that are more eating quality relevant.
obviously a medical grade CT scan, it's pretty funny to imagine, you know, a live cow being able to be inserted into a CT scanner at a hospital or something. So there's obviously work to be done to get that technology to a place where it can be applied in the paddock as well, right? I mean, that's a huge jump.
Yes. So that's the problem. There are CT scanners now being used in the equine area, particularly racehorses. These are attached to into robotic type systems that that scan the body, the animal as it's standing still in the equine area. So there's moves into livestock, but yes, to be able to take that sort of technology on farm, being medical. And be able to adapt it to that harsh environment is going to be a fairly difficult task.
Mm. So when you talk about ideas that could change the whole beef industry, the idea that one day there would be some sort of scanner or way to measure for a producer to stand in the paddock, take a measurement of yield and eating quality in the paddock, and then think about where they're going to market that particular beast to, I mean, that would just go off like a bomb, wouldn't it, in the industry?
I think so. It means it puts control back into the hands of the producer to decide what sort of animal he needs to produce. Therefore, he can design a production system around that that animal and be able to measure with complete confidence that he can predict it onto the hook and in terms of how it will grade so that he receives top dollar for an optimal article. That is compliance, 100% compliance. He takes back control of his business, because at this point in time, the way I look at it, as a beef producer on farm, and pretty much his entire business is determined by acts of God and nature. He has no control of the weather. He has no control of anything other than the fact that he can try and manage his pastures, he can try and manage, but at the end of the day, he can't control weather and he can't control other acts of God and nature. So he's in a disadvantage to start with. We need to provide tools for them to be able to measure their inputs. Inputs are basically measure their soils, their pastures, right across the board. I think one day that a farmer will sit, or a producer will sit in his homestead. He'll go to his office, he'll have an array of three or four screens, and he'll have devices streaming back into his system telling him where he's at, soil moisture, pasture growth, reduction through grazing. He'll have weather being plugged in. He'll have drones out looking at cattle in terms of where they are and their biological status in terms of who's pregnant, who's sick, who's been injured. So that's where it'll go eventually. All the devices in the world will be there to deliver the optimal production system. If you have the data, you have the power. It's that simple. So it comes back to one word, measurement. Mm. I've spent 30 years trying to figure out what matters, what really counts. Where can I have the maximum impact? And there it is, in a nutshell. It's not rocket science. It took me 30 years for the penny to drop, but when it dropped, I thought, right, there it is. My job is to work on cost and price. That simple. And the third element is compliance. Everybody gets it right. There's no, you know, if everyone gets it right on spec, then everybody makes money.
And now that you've found that point of measurement, as that's the linchpin for everyone to make the best money, is your job facilitating that, finding the best minds and putting them on
absolutely.
The job?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I participate in everything and I talk to everyone. As soon as, and I've made it known in the industry that any new machines that are coming to the marketplace, either as ideas out of universities or as commercialisations for the market, I am open to play on farm and on factory. Don't care where they are. We're talking to the Danish. I got a whole array. They're all very aware, because I've made them all aware at council committee level, peak council committee level, down through the RDCs, down through the rural R&D for profits, through the feds, through ARMTEC, all the way down. I've let all the scientists know that through the universities that have a very clear focus on that sort of area, measurement area, and we're here to trial that kit. So I got a lot of avenues of gear coming in here for trialing and testing and watching closely on everything else that's being done. The future is measurement, no doubt about it.
This podcast is an initiative of the Australian Intercollegiate Meat Judging Association. ICMJ is a not-for-profit association which aims to provide opportunities for students to learn and to build the pool of intelligent young meat industry representatives. For more information, head to the website icmj.com.au.